from the book The Open Door of Emptiness by James Lowe. Chapter 1, Getting to Know How We Are, Part 3. Middle Way, Avoiding Extremes. The Buddha's Dharma is often referred to as the middle way, the path which lies between the polar extremes. The two extremes that the Buddha frequently discusses are the belief that things are truly permanent and last forever, and the belief that things exist only for a moment and leave no trace at all. Each something arises out of nothingness and is itself nothing in the moment when it appears to be something. To see this is to follow the path between the extremes. Form and emptiness is the way in which these extremes are often expressed. The view of permanence is expressed in the notion of form, and the view of annihilation is expressed in the notion of emptiness. Just as we use deities such as Padmasambhava and Tara to help us understand the way in which form and emptiness are present together in one place, in one moment, we also use the view of non-duality to understand that the emptiness of the mind is not different from the arising of thoughts in the mind. The central focus of all the meditation practices is to dissolve the belief that objects are strongly real in themselves, and to relax the mind that grasps at these objects as real. The mind has two main tendencies, to be too tight and to be too loose. The Buddha likened the mind to a stringed instrument. If the string is too tight, then the pitch is too high. If the string is too loose, then the pitch is too low. You have to tune the instrument. A sitar has strings on the front which are actually played. Behind them are the sympathetic strings which vibrate in resonance with the strings that are played. These sympathetic strings have to be tuned accurately so they will be able to vibrate in harmony with the main strings that are being played. We could think of our meditation as being like these sympathetic strings. What we have to do is subtly tune ourselves so that we are able to pick up the vibration of what is around us and resonate with that. We don't want to use an intentional, egoic energy out in the world. Rather, we use the energy of the world to evoke our potential as required. Too tight. We want to avoid being too tight and rigid. This would take us into the realm of anxiety, of standing back from situations, and being cut off from the world by a self-protective withdrawal. We also want to avoid the other extreme of being too loose. We don't want to be chaotic, all over the place, with no boundaries, tumbling through life without any direction. The Dzogchen approach to meditation is to observe ourselves in relationship to the world. For example, you may have come here this weekend with some uncertainties about your own Dharma practice, your meditation, or about Tibetan Buddhism in general. You have questions, but you have not asked them yet, and you're wondering whether you'll get a chance to ask your question before the weekend is over. You have a very interesting piece of research to do here. How do I sabotage or block my ability to get my needs met? What do I do in my own head to stop my mouth opening and the words coming out? This is also part of meditation, watching how mental patternings block our easy play in the world. We may be anxious, and in our anxiety, we look at the world extremely carefully and see so many opportunities. However, in the very intensity of seeing the opportunity, we're somehow separated from the opportunity, and so we cannot make use of it. If you find yourself being like that, then it is important to learn how to relax. Relaxation means letting go of attachment to fixed ideas, ideas about ourselves, and ideas about others. We might think that other people are more important than us, that other people are critical of us, that other people are like our mother, our father, our school teachers, and so on. All kinds of fearful thoughts stimulated by our past can arise. Their causal circumstances vanished a long time ago, yet we continue to be attached to them. We can spend a lot of money going to therapy to learn how to relax. Or we can use the Buddha's very cheap and simple method of mindfulness meditation. It's known as Shine or Shamatha. Shine meditation calms the mind by focusing on something simple, such as our breath. Thoughts still arise, and we may find them very interesting, but we practice not paying attention to them, and we just let them go wherever thoughts go off to. Again and again, we return our attention to something so very simple, so very boring, to our breath going in and out. When practicing Shine meditation, it's very important not to pay attention to thoughts when they arise, as they surely will. Through this practice, we gradually dissolve our attachment to the thoughts that take us into situations of tightness and restriction. We all suffer from fears, such as fear of death, fear of rejection, fear of humiliation, fear of being thought stupid, fear of pain. The Buddha clearly said that all suffering arises from attachment. If we accept this as a working hypothesis, it will help us to directly see that our own attachment to ideas arising in our mind creates these various fears. The fear of abandonment arises from the anxiety that other people won't like me, that they'll reject me and I will feel lonely and destroyed. Because of this kind of fear, people put up with many unhealthy situations they don't like, such as oppressive situations at work and oppressive relationships. Such situations shrink our capacity to open to life. We all know that we were born out of our mother in blood and slime, and that when we die, our body will rot and smell and be eaten by insects, and people will want to get rid of it, because dead bodies putrefy. Moreover, When we waken up in the morning, we have sticky stuff in our eyes, wax in our ears, snot in our noses, poo up our bums, and we smell sweaty. This is the reality of all human beings. Even the people who might humiliate us, the people we idealize and give power and authority to, these people also will fart and smell and ooze secretions. In the Dharma, it's considered very helpful to reflect on old age, sickness, and death. However, much of human culture is designed to disguise the realities of our embodied existence. So it can be helpful when you find yourself getting stuck in a situation where other people or situations seem overwhelmingly powerful, to remember that just below the layer of skin of these people, all these things are going on in their body. This imposing person dressed in a suit behind a big desk is just a skin bag full of pus. We can use that awareness to deconstruct our own projected fantasies about what this person can do to us. We can use the classic contemplations of the Dharma and the meditation systems of the Dharma to deconstruct whatever heavy, tight, rigid assumptions keep us feeling anxious in a world where there seems little room to maneuver. Too loose. On the other extreme, we have movements into chaos where we don't really know what is going on at all. Chaos can be depressive or manic. When we get depressed, we become confused. We don't know what to do with our lives. All our thoughts keep returning to the same few topics. Everything is just too much for us, and we can't find a way out into the world. We shrink back from others, sinking and sinking and sinking under the weight of thought. It's very common for people to feel that depression is something that is happening to them. They might say, "I don't want to be depressed. I wish I wasn't depressed. I don't know why this happens to me." It seems to arrive unexpectedly and take them over. But if we have been practicing a little bit of Shine, we know that this is a lie we tell ourselves. We come to recognize that thoughts come and go, and that it is possible to separate the thought from the thinker of the thought. We can observe without involvement. In Shine meditation, when we get caught up in something, we simply recognize that this has happened and go back to the breath. Although we got caught up in a thought and fused with it, we know that this is a transient event. We can waken up and return to focused attention on the breath for a while, and then it gets lost again. And then we see what is happening. So it continues. From the point of view of meditation, the statement, "I am depressed," arises as the conclusion of a process. The concatenation of various sensations and feelings, including anxiety, hopelessness, heaviness, dread, and confusion, is interpreted as an indication that something is wrong with me. Moreover, the name for what is wrong is depression. The term depression is a wrapper which gives shape and substance to the effect, misinterpreted as the cause. Thus, I didn't experience hopelessness because I have depression, but rather, depression is the name I give to disparate experiences that I feel oppressed by. Depression, becomes the defining mood of my identity. And then, no matter how hard I try, I cannot think my way back to health. It is our very reliance on thoughts and feelings as vehicles of truth which has us trapped in this restrictive identity. Therefore, in Shinne practice, we direct our attention away from the depressive thoughts that are arising and onto the sensation of our breath at our nostrils. The breath is not a thing. It cannot be pinned down, and therefore, it's an ideal object of focus for our attention. We are resting our attention on the dynamic, thin experience of the sensations generated by the breath at our nostrils. It is easy to slip away onto another appearance, one which generates more interest and a sense that it offers something to adopt or discard. We are replacing the distracting power of objects which activate our emotions with nebulous objects which will only support our attention if that attention is calm, fine, and consistent. Focused attention conserves energy and protects us from the dissipation that comes with being pulled this way and that by the transient pleasures of unstable excitement. When we practice within the view of duality, it is important to adjust our engagement with what is occurring for us. We should aim to adopt what is virtuous and reject what is unvirtuous. We do this with regard to both external situations and activities and internal thoughts, feelings, memories, and so on. Habitual patterns are difficult to change because they are triggered and become operational before we are conscious of what is happening. Therefore, the first requirement is to maintain a state of calm mindfulness in the midst of provocations. How do we become calm when we are already excited? First, we have to realize that I am not excited. How can it be that I am not excited when clearly I am excited? If we take the sensations of excitement to be ourselves, then this confusion of identity will render us powerless. However, if we have practiced Shinne in quiet, peaceful times, we will believe and know out of our own experience that whatever arises passes away. Moreover, we will have noticed that if we become attached to what arises, we will get caught up in it, and that fusion will continue for some time. Attention has no content of its own. It is the simple availability to attend to whatever is our chosen focus. This could be a sensation at the nostrils, a small image of the Buddha, whatever occurs, or the actual emptiness of the field of appearance. The more we are simply attentive, the less of an agenda we are burdened by. We start to experience the basic freedom when we see that I could, but I don't have to. We are becoming free of the felt necessity that we have to respond. We can simply remain calm and uninvolved. Then we find that our egoic identity is built from identifying with certain aspects of the field of experience. Moreover, when I do not identify with these aspects, nor with any others, I find that I am present as a simple state of attention. I am free of defining content constituting myself and am simply available. And so neither external nor internal arisings can elicit any involvement. This is the fruit of Shine. We are calm and unruffled, like the depths of the ocean. If we stick with this practice and open our focus to be open, unbiased attention to whatever occurs, then we find that the calm depths are unperturbed by the turbulent surface waves. Now we can function in the world without loss of clarity. However, if this basic calm is not achieved, then on the basis of the stupidity of believing that I am real, and that, for example, a cigarette is real, and that the connection between us is very real, there arises desire for this cigarette, which can lead to anger towards those who take away my cigarettes, envy of those who still have some cigarettes left, and pride at the fact that I have a little secret stash of cigarettes left just for myself afterwards. In this way, on the basis of cigarettes, the five poisons increase endlessly, and we wander in samsara looking for a tobacconist. With the various manifestations of dispersed manic excitement, the important thing is to learn to fix the clear boundary between attention and the objects of attention. The practice of calm abiding belongs to the general teachings of the Buddha and are a vital component of the path of renunciation. Without calm and a spirit of renunciation, it is difficult to let go of the many factors which constitute our egoic self. No matter how strong our habits of involvement are, each movement of involvement is a choice. The freedom to choose is, for most of us, achieved through the struggle not to succumb to the familiar. We need to try to identify our habitual patterns of thinking and to recognize that these are constructs. They may appear given, they may appear true, but they are actually just patternings of thoughts. They are impermanent social constructs, acting as causes and conditions. When we practice with the Dzogchen view, we start from the basic completion or perfection of everything. There is nothing to improve, and so no need to adopt or reject. Thus, when thoughts and feelings arise, we don't pull back and observe the thoughts as if they were something other. We stay present in openness and do not interfere in any way with whatever is arising, neither analyzing, nor accepting, nor rejecting. We move from a situation of control into one of acceptance and playfulness, of being able to respond. This means that the one who is tuning the string is not outside, but it is as if the string is tuning itself through its own movement. Sometimes you may be so confused that you can't find the string to tune it. That's why it's useful to have a range of other meditation techniques to help you get in touch with the string and then get back into the practice. The two main things we focus on are firstly the shine to calm down and increase the ability to stay with the separated observing self, And secondly, tantric visualization with mantra recitation, which uses devotion to promote purification and to awaken us to non-duality. Attachment to appearances, as if they were real, leads to liking and disliking, desire and aversion. There are so many projects to get involved with, so many seemingly important things to do. Life goes by, and then we are old and tired. When will we find the time for Dharma study and practice? So it's very important to accept that we will die and lose all the opportunities of this life. Our body will turn into food for worms. That is the truth. We imagine that our body is a safe little house that will keep us cozy forever. But this is not true. When we believe that our body is a reliable point of reference and security, then we spend all our time and energy making it as comfortable as possible. Nice clothes, food, and warmth. We live in a culture that avoids facing the fact of death. Many of us have never seen a person dying or a dead body. There can be a lot of emotion around death, which obscures the very natural transition that is happening. Imagine you have booked a package holiday abroad for a week, and it turns out that the hotel is horrible. You decide to go straight into town to a furniture shop where you buy a new bed, tables and chairs. Then you go to the decorator's shop and organise for workers to come immediately and paint the room, put up wallpaper and lay down some good carpet. You spend lots of money because I am worth it, and also because I have worked very hard all year and I am entitled to stay in a nice place. At the end of 1 week, you have to leave to go back home, and all your energy, effort, and money is gone. This is how ordinary beings spend their time in samsara, going from life to life, decorating hotel rooms. And that's why you have to save up all your good karma and put it down for a mortgage to buy a permanent home in Buddha land. Teachings given in Frankfurt, 11th of March, 1995. Edited by Barbara Terrace and revised by James Lowe in 2022. From the book The Open Door of Emptiness, a collection of public talks and teachings by James Lowe. Read by Wendy. Completed on the full moon. November 2024.